And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host, and we're coming at you live like every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. If you're listening live, you can join us in the chat room at podcastufo.com. We have another good one for you tonight. Alejandro Rojas of Open Minds is coming up with the news in just a minute. Our guests tonight are Paul and Ben Eno. I met them last year. And we had them on the show for a couple minutes, but they're going to be on for a full show. And I'm going to see them this weekend. We're going to talk about that. Alejandro, are you there?
I'm here.
Good to have you back this week. I want to talk before we get into the news, because an article came out that disturbed me a bit, that I think was taken totally out of context or not really looked into. And it was in the New York News and Politics. It was written by Mark Jacobson. And the title of the piece is called The End of UFOs. And basically what he writes about is that the attendance on these events is way down. I have to say, well, that is very possible. This is my take, and I want to get your side on it too. My take is a couple of things. First of all, he wouldn't be writing an article about UFOs unless he knew that it was going to get a lot of traffic. And second of all, when he's talking about these old UFO conferences, you know, years ago, this was pre-internet. People didn't get their information easily, so they had to go to libraries, look at what the latest books were that were coming out, or they had to go to conferences. Today, you can get on the computer and find out all kinds of information, listen to shows like this. You can also order DVDs of the conferences afterwards. And I actually commented on this piece and basically saying that. And I wanted to get your side in it. And I mean, I don't think that there's any fall in enthusiasts or people interested in this topic at all. I think it's actually on the rise. And what do you think about that?
So I think you made a lot of arguments as to why at least the thesis of this story is really terrible, wrong, way off base. Just because... I mean, he essentially goes to a conference, the MUFON conference, and thus from the conference declares UFOs are over because in the 70s, you know, there were more people at the conferences. But like you said, you know, we didn't have the internet. In the 70s, we didn't have 100 channels either. And, of course, you know, a lot of these channels, H2, Science Channel, Sci-Fi Channel, they've all got these UFO shows that are really popular. Another thing, I mean, like we're just about to talk about news, and it's exciting because every week, you know, that I come to talk to you or I do my show, there's an abundance of news on new sightings and new things going on. So I see his point. One point he makes is that a lot of these speakers are talking about events that happened 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he has a really good point there. And, you know, at least with our conference, one of the things we try to highlight is people doing more up-to-date work, doing work on things that are going on right now. And as you know, there are people doing things like that. You know, someone who comes to mind is David Marler. You know, had him on the show, so have I, talking about
I haven't had. I've tried to get David on.
Oh,
he's
you
the
haven't.
One in the triangles, right?
Exactly. You know, he was an interesting speaker to have. But, you know, we had another gentleman talking about the new findings when it comes to string theory. And if UFOs are using string theory, then there's some things that we can look for there. There are a number of people doing new exciting work, and there are exciting, like we're about to talk about, sightings happening all the time. So I think that, you know, looking at the TV shows, looking at how at least our conference, which is currently the biggest UFO conference, is growing in attendance. I just went to Contact in the Desert. They are huge. I mean, their attendance is literally starting to rival ours. which is great. And they have a different audience than we do. So there are thousands and thousands of people interested in this. You know, the MUFON Symposium is a small group. It caters to MUFON people. It's never been the largest event, and except for maybe in the 70s. Actually, in the 90s, they were pretty large also. But it's not anymore. So I think this person needed to do a lot more research than just go to a conference that gets a fraction of the attendance that a conference like ours gets, or even that Contact in the Desert got.
Why don't you talk quickly your conference in February?
Yeah, in February we're having our conference again, and it's in the Phoenix area. It's going to be the 18th to the 22nd. Again, you know, we're getting a lot of people. Some people have given us some feedback that so far the names we've posted, they're not familiar with a lot of them. You probably will be, because you do a lot of interviews of people doing up-to-date stuff, and people who listen to my podcast will know most, if not all of them. But we've got a lot of really great people doing new research, looking at some of the latest stuff going on. So it's really exciting. We have over 20 speakers typically. It's a five-day event. However, our event is actually cheaper than most conferences. And right now, if you register by September 5th, you're going to get $50 off. So it's going to be $200 for two dinners, all the speakers, everything going on. And it is the biggest and the best. Being 5 days gives you enough time to actually hang out with the speakers, too, and have time to talk with them and everything. So I'm really excited about this year. I think we've got a great lineup, and encourage everyone to go.
I heard a rumor that Podcast UFO's Martin Willis is going to be out there.
I've heard that rumor, too, and I am so excited about the possibility of that. I know I've heard, you know, conflicting reports as to whether or not that rumor is true. And
so
I think and, you know, I wish this Martin guy wasn't so wishy-washy sometimes and would just commit. But I would love that. I've been begging this guy to come to our conference for years now, so I hope he does.
I do, too. Hey, all right, so what's going on? For the news, we have some sightings this week.
Yeah, lots of great sightings. Some not so great, but North Carolina is one of them that's really exciting. So on the 16th, there were some people who saw some UFOs over the ocean in North Carolina. In particular, WWAY News reported on a sighting over Ocean Isle Beach, where a woman actually recorded some lights off in the ocean. Some people have said, well, those kind of look like Chinese lanterns. And admittedly, you know, some of them are red and oranges and might be. However, there were a lot more sightings. And in fact, ever since we posted this story, we've been hearing from a lot of people from the beaches in North Carolina who have had sightings. There's a gentleman, Gary Travis, who submitted some video that he got the other day. And these are lights that are twinkling over the ocean. So really interesting. We've posted a lot of updates from some of the people we've heard from. Other people have saying, you know, what I saw were not Chinese lanterns. We also reached out to the local MUFON. And the director of North Carolina MUFON, Lakita Adams, she said that they did have a flap in June that Camp Lejeune out there is a Marine base, but they had some military exercises going on the days before this recent spat of sightings, but that may be involved with it. However, the assistant director, Israel Curiel, says he's been investigating it for a long time, that this area has tons of sightings. They've received 120 in the area in the last year. He says last September, he went out there to go check it out, and he had his own sighting of an orange orb out there. Maureen Ellsbury, who was on Uncovering Aliens, who, of course, is my colleague here at Open Minds, she said they did an episode out there that some of you might have caught. And while they were filming, they caught some strange orange lights out in the ocean out there as well.
Now, this woman's name is, and I'm not making this up, Woozy Dell.
Woozy Dell.
So Woozy Dell, you know, I watched the video, and she was saying right off the bat, you know, I'm a total skeptic. I don't believe in UFOs.
But, right.
You know, I kept seeing these. One came right after another. And one of the pictures that is posted on your site, and by the way, all the stories will be in our show notes, and you can click right over and look at these stories. There's a picture like a disc-shaped object as well. like a white light. Now, was that taken by her as well?
Yeah, that was taken by her. She actually took a couple videos. So we have a still, the first picture, the one you're referring to, is from her first video where you see a row of lights and one of them looks disc shape. And then there's a second video she took, and we have a still from that one where it looks like a string of red, orangish lights, which could be Chinese lanterns. I guess they could be military flares as well. But the military said they were done with their exercises Saturday morning, and this was seen on Saturday morning. I'm not sure. And then, of course, the twinkling lights that we have later in the story are different. But, yeah, that was all taken by Woozy. And now there's even more news going on out there with other people who have submitted pictures and video.
Great, great. And let's talk – you have two more sightings we're going to talk about. What's the next one?
Tom DeLonge, and I love this. You may know who he is. If you're a fan of Blink 182, you do.
Yep.
This is the rocker kind of frontman for Blink 182, which, of course, is a big band. They are very popular. And Tom DeLonge has been into UFOs and stuff for a long time. For probably a couple years, he ran a website called Strange Times where they covered paranormal stuff. And we worked with them a lot, sharing stories back and forth, which was really cool. And my colleague Jason and Maureen have gotten an interview with him before. He's also been on Larry King defending UFOs. He is really, really into the topic. He's a huge UFO fan. And he has been a little bummed because he hasn't had a sighting of his own. But the other day, he posted a video he took on Monday, August 25th in the San Diego area of some UFOs. And you see this short video of lights. Now, looking at it, unfortunately, this looks like it very possibly could be military flares. Of course, San Diego is pretty much surrounded by military bases. So that's a strong possibility for what he said. But he does say he does say he watched these lights for 30 minutes and he believes them to be more mysterious. So really cool. And of course, because he is who he is, that's making some news as well.
Right. Now, you know, the only thing I got to say, they're pretty white for military flares, but you know, it is like you said, it is possible. It almost looks like they're moving, but maybe it's because they were moving in the car. And if you don't like to hear someone use swear words, then don't watch the video.
Yeah.
If you're cool with that, then you can watch the video right through the show notes.
I've got some videos of flares, though, and the lights look very similar in color to what's in his video.
But we can't burst his bubble.
Yeah. No, those are UFOs.
Yeah.
Flown by extraterrestrials.
Unidentified.
And, no, identified. They're extraterrestrial.
Oh, yes, yeah.
I'm changing my tune.
Okay.
Because you're right. We should cater to him because he's a cool dude.
That's right. All right. And what's the last sighting?
The last sighting is really cool, too. I love this one. This one is in Lower Paxton Township, Pennsylvania. And there was multiple witnesses to this one as well. A lady named Stephanie Wilkerson the other day was having a glass of wine when she saw some strange lights. She decided to start videotaping them, and then she called her husband and her neighbor. They got freaked out by it. They didn't know what it was. So this is the exciting part. She calls the cops, and the cops come over, and they don't know what it is either. In fact, the ABC 27 News, who covered this story, interviewed a Lieutenant Gary Seafelt. He was not the police officer who was on the scene, but he was a representative of the Lower Paxton Township Police who spoke to the news. And he says their officer went out there. He couldn't tell what he didn't know what he was seeing. So he called his sergeant and corporal to verify what was weird. They thought it was weird. They called the local Fort Indiantown Gap Army and National Guard post. They also called Harrisburg International Airport. Both of them said there was no aircraft activity in the area that they were aware of. And Seafelt, the police representative, his conclusion was, our officers saw something that was out of the ordinary for the night sky. So I think that's really cool that these cops are willing to say, hey, we were baffled. We don't know what the heck that was either. And this is another lady who is a skeptic. She says that the whole thing scared her. And she said, for me to see that, I'm now a believer in UFOs.
and her name's not even Woozy.
It's not Woozy. It's not that odd either. Stephanie, which I think is a beautiful name, but she is she's not a very – Woozy wasn't very odd either. They both seem to be very normal, down-to-earth, cool people. And, you know, how cool would that be to be hanging out on the porch enjoying a glass of wine and also having some UFOs as entertainment?
Yeah, that's sort of what happened to me in a sort of a kind of a way.
But really?
I think we talked about my sighting years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, thanks so much for the news, Alejandro. It's always a pleasure, and we'll be speaking to you next week.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you so much for having me on again, and we'll talk to you soon.
You bet. Hang in for a short music clip. We'll be right back with Paul and Ben Eno. Paul Eno, how are you? Did you unmute your mic?
I sure did just now. You took me by surprise.
How are you? Is it just Paul?
For the moment, Ben is on his way. He should be here shortly. There were some problems with the trains up around Boston where he is a production manager at WERS-FM. Not bad for a summer job, but he has to deal with the trains every day coming back and forth to Rhode Island. So he'll be here shortly.
Well, hey, welcome to the show. We met last year. You were on for a very short bit on one of my shows, and it was such a pleasure meeting both you and your son. Great, great people to share a room with. Right off the bat, can you tell, you have quite a history. You started all the way back in 1970. You were in three seminaries, kicked out of one, or was it you were kicked out of three and one, or what was that?
I managed to graduate from two, but the third one kicked me out for my paranormal research about maybe a year or so before ordination. So maybe the church and I both had a lucky escape.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder, you know, I was thinking about this earlier today. I wonder if that would happen today. What do you think?
That's a good question, and I'm often asked that. At the time, now this is 1977 when this occurred, they were still coming off the paranoia that resulted from the movie The Exorcist. And as it happened, I had been working with the Jesuit priest who was the technical advisor for that film. Sorry to his dying day he ever did that, but nevertheless, there it was. And there was a certain paranoia about this subject in general. And I would say, you know, like they're going to listen to me. I mean, I'm only a seminary student. Why don't you just tell people this is what it is? This is what we believe. Don't worry about it. You know, this is what we do about it. You know, sleep well, all that business. And they just wouldn't do that. And of course, all clamming up just makes people more curious. So that's what happened. Now, they do seem to have lightened up somewhat. I'm not really in contact with any of them anymore, but I did have three friends at the Vatican. Wow. And again, like they're going to talk to me about it. But one of them worked in the secret archives and all this business. But supposedly there is some sort of a little bit more PR on the subject. supposedly they're training people. I would, however, issue a word of caution since we're on this subject for just a moment. The people who call themselves demonologists and exorcists and claim to be trained by the Vatican, I consider that highly suspicious. Anybody who's not a priest under the authority of a canonical bishop would not, you know, for what that may be worth, is not really officially even part of the Roman Catholic Church, let alone an exorcist. And there are an awful lot of people out there doing this because they think it's, I don't know what they think, there may be ego involved, but it's extraordinarily dangerous. So that's just a word of the wise.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're listening live, well, we're speaking with Paul Eno, and Ben will be coming in shortly, we hope. You can jump over to podcastufo.com and get into our chat room real quick and ask our guest a question or two tonight and interact with the people that are already in there as well. So you and I and your son will be all meeting up again this year. Again, I say, but we were at the, I think it was the, wasn't it the New England UFO conference last year?
It was, yes.
And this year we're meeting in a couple of days over in Exeter, New Hampshire, at the Exeter UFO Festival. Let's talk about that a little bit. I'm really excited to go there. I know it didn't happen last year because they had a fire in the town hall.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's, talk about rotten luck.
Yeah.
It's but anyway, that's always a wonderful event. We've attended for years. We couldn't in 2012 because we were in England, but at Rendlesham Forest, by the way. And we have had a wonderful time in past years. It's Stan Friedman is one of the speakers. And Kathy Marden will be there, the niece of Betty and Barney Hill will be there in a private capacity, not as a speaker. And it's just going to be really fun. You yourself, we're anxious to hear you. We ourselves have a new program we're going to be presenting. And this will be the first time, you know, with the exception of Woodbridge, England, that we will have spoken at a specifically UFO event. And the UFO community, we've always been thought of as, you know, as opposed to the ghost researcher type community where we've long been known, the UFO people sort of think of us as radio show hosts, you know, albeit with a certain amount of experience in this or that. But this is the first time we'll be speaking, and we have been working on a number of, really for the past 10 years, a number of cases that are, you might say, pan-paranormal. So the subject of our talk will be strange connections, UFOs, cryptids, and ghosts. And if you talk to people who are known in the field, they are beginning to notice very odd connections between these seemingly unrelated phenomena. And if you look back, and I'm probably going for kind of far afield here, but if you look back at things like the Mothman case or a number of others, the Rendlesham case itself, there's a lot more to it than just what you hear about in the UFO field. We are working on a case now that I think people will – I think – their mouths will be open and their socks will fall off because this is going on right now. It's in the middle of Connecticut, and it involves UFOs, ghosts, cryptids, military activity, a possible or probable secret base, and we have photographs of most of this. So and it's the first time we'll be talking about that. So we are looking forward to Saturday, and I do point out that it is a free event for at least the speakers. You don't have to pay to get in. So
doesn't sound like too much going on in that UFO event.
No,
about everything you can think of. Hey, I got a question for you. You know something I didn't realize? I didn't realize that I was speaking at this conference, but I'm on the speakers page.
Yes, you are.
So actually, someone called or emailed me and said that I was speaking from 9:30 a.m. until 4 p.m. on that day.
I saw that,
according to the website.
My gosh, you're going to be tired.
I'm going to have
arranged to give you coffee and stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to have to start out with talking about my first Lost in Space episodes I ever saw or something. Start out real young. Yeah. Wow. So anyway, that will be a lot of fun. I can't wait. Can't wait for that. There is a question up on the message board we have here, and it is, let's see, does Paul and Ben have their favorite alien encounter? That's the question.
That has happened to us or that we've just researched?
Well, it's up on the message board, so I'm going to say that you researched, most likely.
Okay. Well, let's see. Alien encounters. I think certainly the Rendlesham case has to be up there because we've done more on our show when we went on the air in, my gosh, 08, and CBS picked us up in 09, and that sort of thing. So starting, it was 2010, I believe, in recognition of the 30th anniversary. The end of 2009. The end of the year, which was the beginning of the 30th anniversary year of the Rendlesham case, we began to have on-air panels with all the major witnesses. And it was the first time that show in April of 09 when Colonel Charles Hall, the deputy base commander, and several of the others had appeared with Larry Warren, who's one of the more controversial eyewitnesses. And people can look this stuff up. And we had – this is on CBS, which had a brand-new – studio in Detroit with all sorts of new equipment, and the interference was absolutely bizarre. To this day, as far as I know, the engineers have never figured out what the interference was. There were people laughing in the background. People were dropping in and out. It was really terrible. So finally, after the second show, we had to take it off CBS and put it on an internet station that gave us some time for this, and all the others were done on that. And we never even tried to do it on our AM/FM station in the Boston Providence area, but really strange. But all those podcasts are available, 16 hours worth, at BehindTheParanormal.com. So that has to be our favorite incident. And of course, Larry Warren's story differs somewhat from what happened to Jim Peniston and John Burroughs. Jim Peniston, by the way, will be our guest in 2 weeks on the WON 1240 in this area. And Larry Warren talks about going into the forest as an Air Force security person with other Air Force people and seeing landed craft with little people and high-ranking officers standing there and activity of that sort going on. And, of course, Peniston and Burroughs refer to going to the woods and seeing a landed craft, which Jim Peniston touched, and described that in hypnosis session later on, you know, if you take hypnosis seriously, which is kind of an if. He said these were not aliens, they were us. And today he talks very interestingly about a binary code that was downloaded to him and then he wrote down, thought nothing of it. And again, people can look all this up. So I think that's one of the more interesting ones. I think Tom Reed as well. Tom Reed will be at the second New England UFO conference. That'll be in October. And I believe you'll be there too, Martin, in Leominster, Massachusetts. Yeah. And Tom has recently come to the fore as a witness and really a person having had an encounter as a boy. He and his brother both, when living in Massachusetts, well, respective Massachusetts and Connecticut. And this seems to be a case that has been pretty much acknowledged as such as the abduction of an entire family over certain periods of time. So I think that's certainly one of those as well. And Tom, of course, will be in Leominster in October. So
I want to talk a little bit about Rendlesham Forest. And what I want to talk about is the divide. You mentioned it briefly right there, the two different opinions, Larry Warren, Colonel Charles Hault, and Peniston. And there's a lot of friction between all those people and all their purported sayings. Do you have any take on what's going on there?
Well, one of the things we brought up, all the hours we've interviewed everybody, I just don't think I've gotten an adequate answer to this. Rendlesham Forest is a deep well. We've been there ourselves, and some very interesting things happen. And we research cases not only by spending years on them, but by building a network of spies or informers, if you will. Mm-hmm. Perhaps that's not the right term, but local people who can feed us information and whom we trust. And we have been in touch with a lot of local people there, and a lot of strange things happen. So I don't see why, in that context, Larry Warren and the other two fellows couldn't have had entirely different experiences in different places in the forest on the same evenings. All right, particularly given the time slips that sometimes occur there. Now, John Burroughs will talk about a slip in time that he believes occurred with him in the context of that landed craft and that sort of thing. And you know, he doesn't go too deeply into what he think might have happened then. But as I say, it's a deep well, and all sorts of things are possible. And I don't see why there's this political difference. And on our show, supposedly, Colonel Hall admitted for the first time that Larry Warren had been involved in the operation. Really?
When was your show with him?
That was April. Ben, was that April 09 or April 10?
Hello, and I think that was 09. No, hold on. Wait. And
April 2010. You've been on the air, you know, the air so long, especially at my age, you kind of forget. But it's in there anyway, the podcast. Maybe if they go to the behindtheparanormal.com, there's a link for special podcasts and then special shows. It'll be right there, the Rendlesham Forest series, and they're all there. So, but it was on that very first show on CBS with all the strange interference that occurred.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, welcome, Ben. Glad you're here.
Hello. Sorry it took me so long to get here.
Yeah, you had quite the trip, I understand.
Yes.
You know, someone just wrote on the message board that they would buy a used car from Hull. And, you know, I got to tell you, after I watched him in North Carolina, tell his side of the story and spoke to him privately and saw the emotion and how this thing affected him, you know, I believe his story 100%. I mean, he's a solid guy.
He does seem to be that. And he told us that when, and he probably has mentioned it elsewhere too, that when he retired, the security people would debrief him as they do anyone with a clearance, especially an officer of his rank. And they said, and he said, "May I talk about the Rendlesham Forest incidents of December 1980?" And they kind of looked at each other and said, "Well, nothing happened in 1980." So the implication being, "We'll go ahead and talk about it." So. But again, you don't know really what's behind some of these people. One of the suspicion, one of the differences between Larry Warren and the other the other two fellows, Burroughs and Peniston, is that Larry did not spend a lot of time in the military. He got out on a medical discharge and has been unable to get his records and this sort of business and tried to get back in, and they wouldn't let him back in. Now, Burroughs and Peniston, on the other hand, and Hall, went all the way to retirement. And there has been some suspicion that maybe they were under the, and I'm not saying I believe this, because I believe they're all friends of ours, and they're all sincere people, in my opinion, that maybe they were messed with or influenced. And I think that's Halt's term, messed with. Because after the event, supposedly, people were possibly drugged, even with sodium pentothal and all this business. And Larry Warren talks about being taken to an underground facility where he was questioned and all this business. And, it's just, when it was served in the military and done some intelligence work, it has all the earmarks of that famous term, disinformation. Because in the 60s, it became known to them that they really, really couldn't keep secrets anymore. So if you release inaccurate information from accurate sources and accurate information through lunatics or people who are perceived as such, then you can keep things. Everybody keeps guessing. Everybody loves a mystery. Keeps people busy, and they don't. That's how you keep a secret. So one never knows whether these people, in any case, I'm not just talking about the Rendlesham people, but people who have been involved with the military or any special projects, are telling the truth as they don't know it, or are telling the truth to the best of their ability, but really aren't telling the truth because they don't know the truth. Maybe that's a bit convoluted, but you get my point.
Yeah. I'm going to ask Ben, I'm going to ask you this question, because you haven't spoken too much, so you just got here. What is your, you know, I know you have him coming up as a guest, Jim Peniston, but I wonder, there are a couple of things I wonder about him, and one of them is why would he indeed keep that binary code secret for so long and then come out with it? And secondly, the time travel thing, it seems like that's gone back and forth on, and he's solid on it now, saying I think they're from the year 8000 or something like that. I can't remember what I heard recently, but what is your take on all that? And Jim and I have communicated before on Facebook, but I'm sure he doesn't listen to the show. Say whatever you want.
Well, he's a friend of ours.
You never know who's listening, and so I choose my words carefully here. Honestly, there's a lot about the Rendlesham Forest thing. I mean, even though we did 16 hours on this, we've done show after show after show. I literally have learned nothing about this case because there's nothing conclusive. Everybody has, like, different stories about the same event. Occasionally they match up, but they match up in odd ways that don't make sense. So, in my opinion, I'm trying to think of how to say this. I'm trying to think of how to say this without coming off as a jerk. I don't do UFOs. It's not, well, we do, but I'm not an expert on it. So I can't say with any sort of authority one way or the other whether, oh yeah, this totally happened, or oh yeah, I agree with this guy, because for one thing, it'll be taken personally, and then everyone will be like, oh, you're on this person's side. And it's like, I don't choose sides because it's not that big of a deal to me. I think it's interesting, and I think the truth, like, learning the truth is cool and all, but I feel as if that too much politics comes into play, and then it just, it gets all muddled. The whole point of the case just gets muddled because everybody's like, well, you're in this camp or you're in this camp, and it's, I don't understand why dialogues can't be reached, but that's just sort of...
Maybe that's the intention.
Probably.
Of someone.
Yeah, because, I mean, human nature, we like to fight over stuff, and we like being right. We humans just like being right. It feels nice to be right, except most of the time you could be wrong and think you're right, and... where you could be right, but think you're wrong. It's a very strange thing. Plus, the binary code thing, I'm very confused as to how it actually did get downloaded. The phrasing of it is it just confused me, because I don't consider the human brain as a machine. So maybe it's the phrasing, because usually terms can muddle a situation. Like, for example, when we deal with ghost cases and people say, oh, it's spirits or it's spooky, scary ghosts, when really the terms just ruin the whole point of everything. So maybe it's the terms he uses, but the binary code thing, I do see where you're coming from in that why did it take so long for it to come out? But, I mean, maybe he was scared, maybe, you know, he had something to lose. Now he doesn't really have much to lose because he's not in the military anymore. So, you know, he probably figured, yeah, why not? Or maybe... has more efficient tools to be able to deal with it.
Let's talk about some of the inconsistencies in general, though, because I can't think of any other case that is like this as far as like saying the choosing of sides and et cetera. And so let's talk about some of the inconsistencies. Can you cite some of them that you're aware of?
Well, it was a matter. Well, yes, it's really inconsistent from the get-go. Really, on that there was supposedly three nights. Some people would say four, but three nights in which these craft, in December of 1980, supposedly were seen and descended upon Rendlesham Forest. And although we found out that since Saxon times, strange lights have been seen in Rendlesham Forest, and that's only the beginning. But there's inconsistency about. Who went out on each night, who was where, what they saw, and for how long they saw it. It really
if
is...
If craft landed or if they didn't
Landed or didn't land. There's the lighthouse issue, which I'm always fascinated by skeptics who were not there, who said, oh, well, this is what it is.
Yeah, and that's one thing I didn't want to say because I wasn't there, so I don't know what happened, what didn't happen.
Yeah, I know what happened when we were there, but that's not the same thing.
Yeah, that's different.
Yeah, that's different.
So wait a minute. What do you mean what happened when you were there? Did you actually see something?
Oh, yeah, we're going to talk about this in our program on Saturday. So
no spoilers.
No spoilers, right?
Oh, come on now. You can't do that.
Okay. Well, obviously there's nothing as dramatic as that, although in their book, Left at East Gate, Larry Warren and Peter Robbins say that they arrived at the scene and there were strange lights, there were military... vehicles in the forest, almost sounding like that night in 1980. And this is years later when they were setting about writing the book and they went back and this sort of thing. Now, our situation was not quite as dramatic. I don't know if I want – Ben doesn't usually like to get into this, but there are –
I want to talk about it.
Okay. Certain things happened to him which have nothing to do with UFOs that I could see. There were a lot of orbs, and orbs are very interesting little critters because ghost people point to them as aha spirits and – sometimes, depending on the context in which they're seen, aha, UFOs, and that sort of thing. So those are always very present. A lot of the photographs taken there were very interesting. I'll show some of those on Saturday. There are things that I have never seen before, and I've been doing this for 44 years. The binary code thing is interesting, too, from that point of view, because people we were there with that night said that they have been there and had binary code downloaded to them, so they said, right? We felt very clearly that something was following us in the woods on the left side of the road up to the east gate. This is at night, and I went back the next day myself with Larry and some of our local listeners from that area and got the tour of the whole place. So it wasn't overly dramatic, but there were some strange lights. There were some things that came out in the photographs. And when what happened to Ben, dogs down the road started to howl. And it was really, it was kind of really creepy. But in any case, but you know, my age, I thought I'd seen it all. But Rendlesham has aspects to it that, that are really, I don't know, out of my usual realm of experience.
Right, right. Well, you know, how long did you spend, how much time did you spend over there?
Well, we were there for 2 days. The evening of the second day, we gave our talk. And we went out at night. I guess it was, it wasn't around, you know, in this country, usually they'll nail you if you go to public areas at night. This is, we would call it open space land now. A lot of people hike there and this sort of thing. And they actually have signs saying the UFO trail, because everybody knows about this. And you follow the trail, the, supposedly the security people took on those 3 nights in 1980. But it's very large. It's an extensive forest. And we went out at night, and there really wasn't anyone else there. We were with Gordy Goodger, who organizes the Rendlesham Forest, the Rendlesham Incident Conferences every year. There's another one next month. And there was Brenda Butler, who was one of the first civilian probably the first civilian investigator of this. She's a local resident and had some run-ins with the Air Force on this. And she was with us, and she herself believes she's had binary code downloads and has taken some amazing photographs there. And then, of course, Larry Warren himself was with us and a few other people locally, Beverly Plumridge. And we simply walked up to the East Gate, and this is where, before we even left the parking lot, Ben had his experience, and then up we went to the East Gate. We have a photograph we took there, and then all these other strange things came out later, and we really felt strongly this presence. And then the next day, you didn't want to kind of deal with this so anymore.
No,
so,
I had enough of that point.
Yeah, so I went back. I'm not as sensitive as he is. I went back with some of the local group and some other people as well, and we literally had the tour of where these events took place, and I got to listen to the famous HALT tape.
Oh, yes.
Which was, you know, in the place it was recorded, you know, and we kind of followed. That was kind of exciting. Mm-hmm. And the HALT tape, for those who may not know, was a tape made on that evening by Colonel HALT as he went into the forest with a group of security people to try and find out what these lights were all about, and it was moving and doing all the stuff you hear about. So that was pretty exciting. So it wasn't quite as dramatic as by any means as what happened to those fellows, but it was quite an interesting place. And in our talk, we outlined about 10 different paranormal incidents of various kinds that had occurred within, in many cases, a few miles of Rendlesham Forest since Saxon times, and that are known. You know, there were black dogs and all these things. And of course, our whole background theory is that we're dealing with parallel world intersects here. You're not dealing with a spirit world, or at least not in all cases, denizens from other planets. I mean, that's entirely possible and probable. But how do they get here? They travel zillions of miles through space, or do they jump through parallel worlds to do it? I mean, this the wormhole thing, or however you want to describe it. So that's our background and to this whole thing. And the areas such as Rendlesham are flap areas, or the Mothman situation in the Ohio Valley in the 60s, or the current case in central Connecticut, are all areas, in our opinion, wherein multiple worlds of a number of kinds intersect, and energy is exchanged. Sometimes denizens and inhabitants are exchanged. And why this happens, well, it gets complicated and gets into geotechnics and all sorts of other things, but that seems to be what the origin of these flap areas are, in our opinion, and in our experience. And what's happening, of course, is that you've got energy exchanges going on, and you may not have the Bigfoot related specifically to the UFO, but they're using the same process by which to manifest in our conscious realm. So, and it gets more complicated, but that's basically it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there is a true answer to these things, and it's just the fact that at this point, nobody has that answer. And I'm talking about, you know, most of paranormal, maybe all of paranormal, I don't know. But and sometimes I wonder, and don't even think that UFOs fit in the paranormal realm, but, you know, because people are witnessing, so many people are witnessing them, I think that's the reason I feel that way.
But yeah. Well, my trouble is I'm a professional journalist. I can't, I, for crying out loud, I want to know what's going on. So you do search for explanations. Other people say, what do you have to have an explanation for? Well, it's in my nature. I'm a journalist, you know. I have to know.
Mm-hmm. So I actually listened to your first show today, and I got to say, you know, usually the first show is a really bad. your first show was great. You did this long monologue, and it was just it was really, really good. And, you know, and I just wanted to announce that you have, what did you say, how many hours of shows you have on your website?
Well, just Rendlesham alone, we've got about 16 hours, but we have almost 600, I think it's over 600 hours of podcasts, all free.
A couple of minutes, it's probably like 550.
Yeah, I'll take out the commercials.
Yeah.
So if anyone's going for a long drive.
Very long, yes, like to the moon and back.
Oh, that's great. But Ben, you came along, you grew up in a family, and you saw this going on. And, you know, my son will occasionally listen to the show. When I had someone like Jeffrey Bennett on, an astrophysicist a few weeks ago, he'll listen. But, you know, he just kind of steers away. I'm going to see if he'll go to Exeter this weekend, but I'm not sure if he will. But what drew you to this? Is it things that happened on your own, or was it the influence of your parents, or what drew you to the subject?
It's this guy sitting over here on my left. It's all him, basically. well,
it's all my fault.
Yes, it's your fault. No, I don't know. Usually people are like, well, I grew up in a haunted house, and so, you know, I wanted to check it out, and I don't know. I think it's fascinating because it has ultimate answers to things, and it's very practical to me, oddly enough, because usually you don't think of the paranormal and think it's practical. I think it's rather practical because it's a good exercise in using a lot of different intellectual pursuits, whether it be philosophical, the theological, scientific, whatever, or any sort of area of science. It's a good exercise in intellect, as well as a lovely exercise in which is remembering your own mortality. Yes, mm-hmm. Which is something we always forget because everyone thinks we're going to live forever. Well, too bad, we're going to die at some point. And you know what? I kind of look forward to that, which sounds very depressing coming from a 22-year-old, but it's actually a very good thing. But it's also humbling in that it makes you forget about the self, because that's the whole point, because the self doesn't really exist, because if you're going to go with Amitabha Swami, who aptly puts it, there is no self, there's just a sense of self-reference. And I really took that and ran with it and sort of applied it to this. And forgive me if I don't talk about my experiences, I don't like to share them because they're very personal. And it's sort of my own journey, and when I feel that I'm ready to share it, I'll share it, but I do not feel ready because people ask questions and get it completely misinterpreted, and which I've had happen to me a couple times at different talks, where I'll talk about how I'd do some sort of meditation or whatever, and then people will come to me like, well, how do you do this? You just ground yourself? Like, you know, I astral projected the other day, and I'm just like, no, that's not what I was talking about at all. Like, I don't know what you were going for there, but it's the way that I utilize this, which I feel as if a lot of people should do, is you can't just look at it as, oh, well, it's spooky, scary skeletons and all sorts of stuff like that I just shouldn't pay attention to, when there are a lot of different ideas going into this and a lot of different lovely, great intellectual figures, including my father, that have a lot to say on this issue and what it means for us as a species. And that's essentially why I really stuck with it.
Uh-huh. You know, the thing I think about all of this is, you know, it definitely makes life much more interesting to look into it than just ignore it. That's for sure. We have a question up on the message board, and it's more or less asking if you would talk about the interdimensional aspects of cryptoids or other beings.
Okay, well,
I believe in you. Take it.
All right. Well, I began to wonder from day one. I mean, what's the relationship here between these interdimensional phenomena, which by the end of the 1970s, I figured this had to be. There are simple practicalities involved here. You know, something as big as Bigfoot or Nessie or whatever cryptid you want to talk about, and there have been some cryptids in this Connecticut case that I never heard of before, like box-like figures dancing by windows and all this sort of...
I think we should clarify that just because something's interdimensional doesn't mean that it's highly intelligent.
Or that it's anything we would recognize.
Right.
Exactly. So the nature of the flow of the multiverse as we have experienced it seems to be that somewhat different from what Hollywood has said. I don't know if anybody remembers the show Sliders or Quantum Leap, which I never saw but were described to me. People leaping from one world to another, one version of Earth to another. Well, that doesn't seem to be entirely how it works. It seems to be a very fluid, open system with energy flowing back and forth all the time. And you wonder, well, how it's not very orderly. Well, yes, it is. As a matter of fact, we get into philosophy and theology here, and we think maybe it is a perfect creation. Just it's not necessarily made for our convenience in this particular realm of consciousness. We seem to exist as a superconsciousness across many, many versions of ourselves in different worlds, and that perhaps makes up our subconscious. So it's the same thing with cryptids, I suppose, in a sense. Bigfoot may not be native to this world what we consider the world, or it may pop in and out, not even knowing that it does. And Native Americans sometimes suggest this, that they pop in and out from through what natives call thin places. We would call them flap areas, in and out from perhaps a world where it's still the age of Gigantopithecus. You know, which I'm not quite up on my that sort of anthropology, but early Pleistocene, I believe, or late Pleistocene, whatever. But they're coming and going not only from other worlds, but other times, other worlds where it is still 1910 1 million or 2 million BC or 60 million, whatever. So you get my point. The thing with the quantum mechanics and the realize is that everything that exists, everything that can possibly be, past, present, or future in our terms, is in concrete reality, according to some interpretations that physicists make of this, and an interpretation that we believe we've seen acted out from time to time, or actually all the time. And one of these, of course, would allow these cryptids to come and go. How can you not find something that big? Okay, how come you only find hairs? That sort of thing. There was a cryptid not far from where we live in northern Rhode Island. It was in Mansfield, Massachusetts, which is part of the famed Bridgewater Triangle, so-called, which is another place we like to hang out. And there was the Mansfield Mystery Cat, and this is back in the late 1980s. And I had been investigating the Beast of Exmoor in England the year before that, and somebody from the Massachusetts Environmental Police called me and said, oh, somebody read something you wrote about that lion in England. We got one in Mansfield. I said, what? So Ben wasn't born yet. His older brother was 9 years old. I wasn't about to go out looking for some cryptid with a nine-year-old child, and because his mom, you know, worked during the day, this sort of thing. So it wasn't practical. But in any case, this thing came and went, and the fire chief, who had sort of been in the newspaper laughing at the whole thing, changed his mind when he saw the thing across from his house, and he said it looked like a huge domestic cat of unbelievable size. So it wasn't like it was a puma or something. So we don't have anything like that in our world generally, so I think it might have been one of those things that comes and goes. So we'll make a long story short. I think they come and go, probably completely unintentionally, through parallel world intersects, which are the most normal things in the world. So paranormal is nothing of the kind. So that's the best answer I can think of to that.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of reminds me what you're talking about, the Skinwalker Ranch. You know,
sure.
That, you know, they saw the large animals, and there were so many people that saw things there. It kind of makes you realize that you can't just, you know, shove it away, that, you know, nothing happened. You know,
well, that's what we call this, the Connecticut Skinwalker Ranch, the case I've been talking about, and we've got some this similar things going on there. So we'll be talking about that on Saturday.
Now, can you – we only have like a minute or so left here. Can you talk briefly about, you know, what you mentioned, the things that were going on. Can you give a couple of more teasers on what's happening there?
In that case or at the Exeter?
Yes, in that case.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, it started with ghost sightings in a particular farmhouse, 1783 farmhouse, in which the sixth generation of the family was living. That was in 05. Then was 13. It was one of his first cases. That,
12.
Well, whatever. You were really young. And starting out with the haunted policeman case in Vermont. So they had read my book, Footsteps in the Attic, and said this multiverse thing really is the only thing that will explain this. They would see figures hanging from the ceiling, walking as though they were on a road that didn't exist. When my first time out there, I was standing by a wall, and a horseman went by. I couldn't see, and I could even the trees kind of was stirred up by the breeze that went by there with this. And then by 09, we were dealing with UFO sightings. And our theory is people, it's never one house. It's never one piece of property. It's always over a wide area, whether it be ghosts, anything else. Sure enough, all these people were turning up. And this is still going on. It's still developing. People started to see troops around with armed, you know, with M16s. They'd walk to a certain place, and they'd say that, well, they'd be turned away by these troops. Mark D'Antonio, MUFON's director of audio and video analysis, whom we have brought in on this case because he doesn't live too far away, said that someone he knows was fishing at a secluded fishing spot. Armed troops showed up and threw him the heck out.
Jeez. Hey, listen, I hate to say this, but we're going to have to go. Can you throw out your website real quickly?
Sure, just behindtheparanormal.com and newenglandghosts.com.
Right. And your radio show is, when's that?
That's Mondays, 6 p.m., WOON on the AM dial, or ONworldwide.com.
Very good. Well, hey, thank you both so much. Ben, I'm glad you got to join us after all.
Thank you for what brief amount of time that it was.
I look forward to seeing you on Saturday, Mark.
We'll see you Saturday. Well, that's it for our show today. If you missed any part of the show, you can catch it as a podcast and a whole bunch of other free podcasts on our website, podcastufo.com. You can also check out links in our show notes, as well as joining in the conversation in our forums. Our guest next week will be Paul Carr. Now, you haven't heard of him before. He's a space science engineer, and it should be an interesting show. He's been commenting on our Facebook page. And I want to thank everyone for helping out with the show today. Our guest, of course, the Enos. And Keith Rowland, producer for the Dark Matter Radio Network, and Carrie Lloyd Whitehouse for our music, Peggy Shunning for managing our Facebook page, and remember to like us on Facebook for all the latest UFO news. You can check us out next week right here at the Dark Matter Radio Network and every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Martin Willis, and keep your eyes to the sky, and we'll see you next week.